Ball and Play 2, presented by DraftKings, is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.
Welcome back to the Compound Podcast. This is episode 142, and I'm not Ian Happ. This is producer Tom giving you the rundown on this week's episode, recorded live from the Cubs convention in Chicago. Zach, Dakota, and myself unfortunately could not be in Chicago, so we will not feature on this week's episode. Ian replaced us, though, with some pretty good players. How about a former MVP in Cody Bellinger, Mark Grace, the Cubs legend, and so many more great guests, including founding member of the Compound, Nico Horner, will all join the show. I'll check in throughout to tell you about some of our great sponsors, and at the end, I'll give you the Sloan screen time for the week. But let's get right into episode 142. Ian, take it away from Chicago.
Hello, hello, hello.
We're just going to run this like it's a normal podcast. That's the goal. This is the first ever Compound Podcast live. As always, it is brought to you by Parse Rum. When I say Parse, you say Parse. Parse. Yeah, all right. We have Nico and Jan to lead it off. This is what we're going to do. We're going to go about 20 minutes with Nico and Jan. We're going to bring Barnhart and Tyon on for about 20, and then we're going to finish up with Belly and Mark Grace. So it should be a lot of fun. A lot of fun. The way that I want to start, we were just downstairs having a bite to eat, and I want to talk off-season workouts first, because Neek was really interested in Jan's off-season workouts. You do something different every year, right? A little crazy, a little different?
Yeah, I mean, different from what we're supposed to be doing. Yes, as probably a lot of you guys know, I enjoy MMA. I have some friends that are fighters, and sometimes I'll go in there and step in the ring with them, start sparring, and usually doesn't turn out great, which usually it doesn't. Usually end up getting my butt kicked, but I love it. It's a good cardio. Love getting out there. They take very easy on me. So yeah, from a strange, unorthodox way of working out, that's one of mine. I really enjoy it, though.
I was talking to Hosmer yesterday, and he was talking way back, you guys at a young age on the same travel team, high school team, and he was talking about you, like them sending like six guys at you and you just fending people off in hotel rooms and stuff.
True story, yeah. True story.
So, yeah, Hosmer and I go, shoot, let's see, I graduated with six. It was 2005, and Hosmer and I were teammates in a high school summer team, and yeah, there was a brawl that broke out, and I don't know exactly if I was doing all that, but at that time I was young and dumb and thought that I was invincible. Yeah, and fighting, I loved it, and would not recommend it. It hurts.
What is your, when you're MMA sparring, what is your, are you, you kind of get to the ground, like what's your strategy?
No, it's a very guided way of sparring. You know, it's we're trying to go a couple rounds together just to kind of really just kind of get our heart rates up, and usually don't punch in the face too hard, but I'm allowed to punch them in the face. But then you're trying to play the game of like, man, if somehow I clip him, he's gonna be mad and he's gonna come after me harder. So you play a little bit of that cat and mouse game, trying to, you know, just really move around and just have a good time.
Nick, are you incorporating MMA next year into your workouts? Is that the plan?
The biggest collision I hope I'll ever have is with you in center field.
We still
stay away from that one.
Yeah. Whenever a video of that comes in.
Well, we'll be on different sides of the field this year.
Yeah, so that's
we'll
a good point. Right. That's a good point. Yeah, try to stay away from each other. Nick, a lot of travel this offseason for you. You're logging miles.
Bouncing around, all good things, mixing it up here and there. My dad's in Maine now, girlfriend in Philadelphia, family in California too, but always come back to Chicago probably once a month. and all good stuff there. Feeling good.
Nico's been logging all of these miles. I was telling him about my travel. I was like, yeah, I'm going here, I'm going there. November, super busy. And then he told me his. I was like, just kidding. I don't have that much to do. But I love the image of you in Philly taking a bag of bats or like a whole.
Okay, so my girlfriend stays downtown. Great spot. Neither of us have a car. Fine. But work out in the suburbs. But her cousin has a car. It's like a 15-minute walk away. And then I take her car. But I'm got all these bats, and I'm walking through town, and I do my thing, and it's pretty cold, but make it work, grab a coffee on the way, got bats sticking up out of there, kind of weird looks, usually carrying bats on the street of the city kind of comes with other things, I guess,
yeah.
And like,
yeah,
trying more athletic gear when I do it, so like it matches, yeah. You know, so I'm not a suspect in that situation.
Just like yelling at people, like, I play baseball, it's okay, nobody fear. Let's talk about team chemistry, hanging out. We got to play together obviously all last year, and you know, we spent a lot of time playing, hotel, doing that. Jan, you've been on so many good teams, World Series team in DC and the good teams in Cleveland. What were like, how do you view that? What are the things about hanging out, getting together, like what are the big things about that that bring the team together?
I think one of our and we've had plenty of conversations about this. One of our biggest goals is just to get guys comfortable around each other. We're not just guys showing up at the ballpark, strap it on, let's go play, and then leave, and that's it. No, we're going to spend a whole lot of time together. We're going to spend probably more time together than we do with our families. So why not call ourselves family? Why not just do what we do as a family? And it's going to start in spring. I think it's super important when, an example, in 19 in D.C., literally all we did was every other week. It was everyone's invited. There was no ego. It was like an upside-down thing. Like, no one's at the top. No one's at the bottom. Like, we're all riding it together. Everyone's equal. And it made everyone, like, love each other, man. Like, it wasn't something that we forced upon ourselves. It was just something that organically happen, and I think we got to see a little bit of that last year. I think guys, whether on the road or even in the clubhouses, we were excited to come to the ballpark. We were excited to just kick it a little bit. This game sometimes can stress us out, and sometimes we just need a chance to just hang out and just if we talk baseball, if we want to talk about what happened in the game, cool, because that becomes like a comfortable environment. But at the same time, we just want to just hang out and be friends and hang out like a family.
I think the big dinners and all that stuff is cool, but like my favorite ones is usually just someone's hotel room after a game, and you're just there until 2 or 3, and you're hanging out at just wherever it goes, and just being comfortable in that space. Hotels can be lonely too. Like if you're just going straight home from the game, good, bad, whatever, you just sit by yourself and then get on the bus the next day at noon or whatever time. Like, it's a lot of time alone. So to break that up and have a group that you're comfortable with, and if you don't do it all the time, knowing that's available is really awesome.
Yeah, I think it's like when you go on the road for 10 days, it's so, because we play games every single day, it's so back to back to back to back. And if you get in a routine of just, I'm going to come home from the game, I'm going to sit in my room, I'm going to whatever, play a video game or watch some TV and go to bed, and then you kind of get in that cycle and you feel like you only see your teammates for a couple hours. You don't get to interact with like everybody because everybody's doing stuff all the time. But if you set that example early of like guys hanging out, guys going to, when you get off the bus on a road trip, it's like, all right, what room are we going to? Or somebody shouts out a room number and you're going. Like it's such a big difference maker. And I think the other thing, like when families know each other and like get along, and like there's that ability for like everybody always wants to hang out, it's so much fun and it creates such a fun atmosphere, and I'm super excited for that. I was saying the other day or yesterday, I haven't played on a team where, because I was always younger, so I never played on a team where I was at the same kind of stage in my life as like a bunch of other teammates.
you know? So it's pretty cool, like, guys coming in, like, similar service time, or, like, just, like, Dansby just got married, or guys that are just, like, getting engaged and, like, starting families, and, like, you kind of feel like, for me, personally, now, like, I feel like I'm at a similar stage to a bunch of guys and can kind of relate, and, like, guys that were in the same draft class playing together and all that stuff, like, it's pretty cool. And I can see how, like, obviously you've been playing for a long time, but, like, you get those relationships with guys down the road, and, like, it's so much fun. Like, whenever we go play places, like, you know so many dudes. Like, you've played with guys all over the place, and, like, you have those long-term relationships. Like, that's what makes the game special.
Yeah, and then you start turning into, like, more than that, you know? You start turning into, like, off-season buddies, you know, like you too, you know? You kind of... I think my letter of invitation to the winery trip you guys went to still haven't arrived, but I guess the only thing I do is I host hotel rooms, and then they just go on trips by themselves. But we spent so much time during the year, and then we involve our families, and then next thing you know, we're like planning things out to where the wives and girlfriends are like, hey, let's hang out at some point. And then, like, it makes this like for us at some point, like, you know, we say like, oh man, I've been playing for this game for a long time, but then you technically look at it like you really don't in a lifespan of it, you know? Like, you spend 15 years, 20 years, long time playing, like, you still have like the rest of your life to live, and then you're like, man, like, how about that time I spent playing? And then you like become lifetime friends, and then like, no, you'll start, you know, you said you newlyweds, I'm on my going on 11 years. We just celebrated our 10 year. And we're on 3 kids now. So like you start, you know, enjoying that time, but like, you know, they like to come to the ballpark because they like, our kids are hanging out now. So like, then we have like this whole family vibe, and then it just becomes easier to come to the ballpark. And that's what our goal is, you know, becoming to where it's not a hassle, or the season can get really grindy. And then, you know, as long as you can turn to your teammate at any point and be like, man, that's my boy. He knows what, like, I'm going through. And like you said, you guys are going through all, like, in that same stage of your career. You know, you guys can all communicate. And, you know, why not make it an easier environment for everyone?
Yeah, and, you know, Nico and I got lucky. Not only have we played together for a while, but we got to live together for, you know, three, four months. Like, that, I guess teammates don't get to do that a lot. Like, if you come up through the minor leagues with somebody, you know, there's a chance that you've lived with them or know them really well. But, like, when you get to this level, you know, everybody has families. Everybody's doing their own thing. Everybody's living and kind of away from the field. And so for us to be able to do that, like, we've been able to build this special bond. And, like, it's about doing that, like, throughout the year with everybody and trying to make that tight-knit group. But pretty cool. Before I let you guys go, can we do a Sloan screen time for the people?
Screen time.
Sloan screen time?
Today's?
Yeah.
It better not be very high.
I'm gonna see if
Jan probably had a 3-hour FaceTime with the kids this morning. I will say watching teammates FaceTime their kids is one of the funniest things, and I love it. It's 25 minutes. Bad
25
dad.
25 minutes.
Nice.
My family's here, so I don't get the
I have an hour and 11.
You grind an hour 20, yeah. I don't know how I did that.
Didn't lose.
Oops.
Didn't lose. Can I just tell a quick FaceTiming story? I want to shout out Brian Dunsing. Does everybody remember Brian Dunsing? Lefty extraordinaire. He was unbelievable. My best family FaceTiming story, Brian's on the bus. And he would sit one behind me. So I'm listening to him on FaceTime, and there's just kids flying in and out. He had 4 kids. They were just like, hey, Dad, blah, blah, blah. And Brian is the nicest guy in the world, but I was pretty young. I was like, oh, my, is that what having kids is like?
Oh, my. Terrifying.
Oh, my God. That's absurd. Yeah, but that was my favorite family FaceTiming story. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being our first guest. We're going to bring up Tucker and Tyon. Compound Live.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
2 returning champions, Nico Horner, Jan Gomes, we thank you for your contributions. But now, where's Dakota? I wish he was here. It's time to talk about Athletic Greens. Guys, listen, I understand. I'm not the person that probably should be talking to you about Athletic Greens. I know how I look. But people start taking Athletic Greens or AG1 because it contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, while still tasting good. It costs less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Guys, you've heard about all the wonderful recommendations we made for AG1 and Athletic Greens on this show. I actually had the opportunity to talk to some people from Athletic Greens, the company, and talk about how this company got founded. It's all about the idea that they want to put good things into your body. I don't do a lot of that. I need to do more of that here in 2023, and AG1 might be getting in my bottle, just like it's in Dakota's, just like it's in Zach's, and just like it's in Ian's. Took Ian a while, but he did finally get to there. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a 1 year free supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/compound. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/compound. Guys, we've been telling you about Athletic Greens. It's time to go. Take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So you just heard from two returning champions. How about a former guest who's of recent ilk, Tucker Barnhart, one of my favorite recent guests, and a former New York Yankee, a man close to my heart, Jameson Taillon, coming up right now live from Chicago. Ian, take it away.
Nice watches, guys.
Very nice. Okay, this is how I want to start. First of all, JMO, you went and got some coffee today. We love that.
Yes.
JMO's a big coffee guy, big coffee guy. Pour over extraordinaire. He texted me this morning and he was like, yo, is Connect doing pour over? It's like, yes, fourth floor, go up there. They'll set it up. That's big time. I want to start talking about the Central. You guys both played in the Central, Cincy and Pittsburgh. Now you're back. Talk about being a visiting player and coming to Wrigley and like what that was like.
Yeah, I'll start. David Freese used to always joke on the Pirates. The NL Central has a lot of rivers, a lot of rain. But Wrigley Field for us, like when I was young, coming up to the big leagues, you know, it was like a big league feel at Wrigley that you just don't get anywhere else. Really tough place to play, especially as a young guy. You know, it didn't help going through that lineup back then. It was really tough. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it just felt like, you know, if you were late in a game, it was close. Like the Cubs would always just find a way to pull it out. And then, you know, of course, the victory song and stuff. It's like, it's a place like no other.
When you hear that song as a visiting player, does it piss you off?
You hate it.
You hate it.
You absolutely hate it.
You start hearing Go Cubs Go and you're like, God.
Walk into the clubhouse, you can hear everybody singing it on the concourse, walking out. It's just, you can't get away from it until you're literally on the bus headed to the hotel.
That is so good. I'll tell you, last year, Wade, you know, I mean, you played with Wade Miley, who's now a Brewer, ew. But Wade got really into Go Cubs Go, and so he would make us play it in the clubhouse after every win, and everybody was like, but talk about playing here as a visiting player, like, that was a bad clubhouse for a long time, too, huh?
It was a bad clubhouse for a long time. The thing for me about Wrigley Field is it just feels alive, and I don't know how to, like, describe that other than as a visitor. It feels like you're obviously playing the team, but you're playing something else also.
Yeah.
And I think what J-Mo said about late in the game, it felt like the Cubs would always come back and beat you. They would hold a lead. It's such a tough place to play as a visitor that I'm sure I can speak for me and J-Mo both, that I'm so excited to call it home and not have to play as a visitor.
Talk about the familiarity of the Central. Do you think, like, it's not the same players as it was? You know, it's always turning over. But, like, for me as a hitter, being able to go through the division multiple times and see familiar faces, like, I've always felt like that's an advantage, and to feel like, all right, like, I know this guy really well. Now I have 30 at-bats against him or whatever it is. Like, do you think that coming back to a division where you've seen guys is something that helps?
Yeah, I think so. I think the guys change that you face, but I think the philosophies of the organizations, unless there's turnover in terms of the coaching staffs and things like that, I think they remain very similar. So you kind of have an understanding of how they're going to attack you as a player. And I think organizationally, from a hitter standpoint as well, calling pitches, and Jamo can talk about it too, I think when you face the same lineups, again, the guys might change, but the organization, the philosophies tend to remain the same.
And so, and a lot of times they bring in like very similar players to replace other players.
Exactly, for sure.
Yeah,
I feel like, I mean, I went from the NL Central to the AL East, and obviously there's 30 big league teams. Every team plays, I guess, a similar style of baseball, like whatever's in at the moment is in. But I always felt like the NL Central was a little bit more hard-nosed, like pitching, defense, pitching inside, sinkers. And then I go to the AL East, and it's like home runs, walks, 3-2 breaking balls. Like, guys are pitching maybe a little more scared, pitching away from, like, you know, the smaller ballparks and stuff like that. So, like you said, like, the teams change, but the philosophies stay the same, I feel like. I feel like it's a little bit different of a brand of baseball, which I appreciate.
It's so interesting that each, like, the AL and the NL have their distinctions, and then each division has their distinctions. Yep. Like, it's nuts that, and it's hard to explain, but, like, when you're in it, you can tell the difference so fast, like, the way teams attack. How, like, being catcher, like, you have to notice that so quick.
Yeah, it's funny, like Jamo said, everybody plays the same brand of baseball for the most part, but there are these distinctions. Like, you know, when you go play the Cardinals, that you're going to have to beat them. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're not going to beat themselves.
They're not giving it up. They're not making errors.
It's things like that just constantly, like, identities that you don't see in other places that are, I think, specific to the division for sure.
Yeah, having only played in the NL Central. And when people talk down the NL Central, I get pissed. Like, no. This division really pitches it. Like, they've got some really good. Yeah. But it's a really interesting, like, perspective of coming back to the division for everything about you guys especially. And I want to shout out Josh Van Meter. I think was he with the Brewers now?
He's probably played for every single Central team.
He's trying to get on every NL Central team. I was like, when he went over, I was like, oh man, you're an NL Central guy. And then I think he jumped to the Brewers this year. I was like, oh my God, you're really going to be on every
team. I found out that via Twitter, I'm an Indiana guy, born and raised, that I found out that I'm apparently not allowed to play for anybody that state doesn't border or Indiana.
Okay.
I'm an NL AL Central guy, I guess. Yeah. And that's just the way it's going to have to stay.
Can you guys talk about, you guys have never played together, but obviously you've played against each other for a long time. When you're building that, and we talked about it when you came on a couple weeks ago, but when you're building that relationship, pitcher catcher, like, what are the biggest things? What are the first conversations you guys have? You just want to talk about it right now? You guys can just start talking about your pitch mix.
And
yeah.
I can start on that. So last week I was on vacation in Cabo. I had just gotten engaged, and I'm sitting there in bed one morning, and Tucker texts me. We don't really know each other yet. We've talked a little bit. And he sends me a screenshot, and he's looking at all my scouting information. And he's like, dude, I'm doing a deep dive on you right now. Like, what do you got on this, this, and that?
Nothing better to do, I guess.
I love that.
I was like, we're not the same, dude. I'm going to the swim-up bar here in a minute to grab a margarita.
He sends me a picture. It's a picture from the beach chair, and he's got, I don't know what he was drinking, but it's just him holding a drink out like this. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing the right thing right now. So
there's definitely, like, you know, when I see a guy like that preparing like that in January, you know, when we're in the summer and it's July and we're playing the Cardinals, like, he's putting a finger down. I'm just going to probably trust him because I know he has that level of care for me and the pitching staff. So, you know, that to me is like a big first sign of building trust and that relationship.
For me, it's just kind of piggybacking on that. It's just I just want them to trust me. And whatever that means, I'm not sure, but, like, when the situation, I want them to know that if I put a pitch down, that there's, like, thought behind it. It's not just that I'm putting it down because we just haven't thrown a changeup in 30 pitches or whatever. I want them to trust me. I want them to know that we're prepared. I think, and the biggest thing for me, and Jan and I kind of talked about it a little bit, is that outside of appearance, I don't want our guys that are on the mound to know who's behind the plate. I want us to be on the same page. I want us to have had the same conversations with everybody. And I think that kind of fluidity throughout the pitching staff and the guys that are catching, I think it's key to getting to where we want to go.
So you get to do all of this stuff in spring training, right? You get to catch guys' pens, you get to talk about what they like to do, and you get to catch a couple innings. You know, max out, you're going to get 5 innings out of a guy. How many starts into the season does it take to get a real feel for, like, all right, I know when, because you don't get all those situations, right? Like, you don't get spring training, guy on second, like, yeah, sure, who cares? You know what I mean? But, like, when you get in those situations in a big league game and it matters, like, that's how you learn. How many of those situations starts does it take before you're like, all right, I know exactly what this guy needs?
I think for me, it kind of depends on the guy. And it's not a good answer, but Jameson and I could hit it off and be ready to go after his second start in spring training, or it could take into May. I think it's a case by case thing. I've played with some really stubborn guys in the past that are going to do what they're going to do, and there's no, whether it's right or wrong, they're not going to let you talk them out of it or whatnot. It could be the worst thing possible, but they're going to do it. And there's other guys that are open to doing anything. And I think that as long as, it just always goes back to the trust for me. It's like if they, and it goes both ways. Like if I, like a guy like Jameson, he's done it for a long time and he's had a lot of success. And so for me, I'm just going to kind of follow his lead and tell him what I see. If there's something that I see that sticks out, and vice versa, if he sees something that he doesn't like in terms of like my target or whatever, then we'll fix it. And I assume that it'll go quickly in terms of that. But it's a case by case thing. In a long winded way, it kind of just matters on who the guy is.
Is there anything specific that you like to see? Like, do you like a target in a specific place? Do you like more middle targets, corner targets? Does it depend on the pitch?
Yeah, so I'm like very visual. So, you know, nowadays guys are relaying signs all the time based on catcher targets and stuff, which can be difficult for me when catchers are told to like set up kind of middle. Like I need to see where I'm throwing the ball. I'm not good enough to just say fastball away, catcher set up middle, but I can still throw it away. So I need to see, you know, a guy moving or showing me exactly where he wants it, and then I can follow along. And, you know, with what you were saying too about like building a relationship with a catcher, you can talk in spring training all you want, but until me and Tucker are out there in the heat of the moment, you know, playing a big team in a big situation, like I feel like that's where we'll start to really hit it off, and then we can talk about it on a flight. We can, you know, have a drink together on a flight and kind of go over what we were thinking in what situation. But you know, spring training, you can draw up exactly how you want your season to go, and then when you're in the moment, that's when, you know, we'll really start to figure it out.
Isn't that the best part of spring? It's like you have all these meetings and like there's all these like things that you're gonna do, like this is what it's gonna make the season, and everything's gonna be perfect. And then like April 15th, it's like throw it out.
Those scatter reports, throw them out. We're starting over. We're starting fresh.
The 117 bunt defenses that you go over in spring training.
Yeah. All right. We have 4 bunt defenses every day. Just do the first one. Just do the one.
Every team's the same with that too. That's the best part.
Yeah. I want to talk about when you're coming into Chicago, you're getting to play here for the first time. Like, you've probably been asked this so many times, but I'm actually interested because you guys have been here on the road as visitors. Like, what are the things that actually being here for 81 games, like having some off days in the city, like what are the things that you're excited about that?
Ooh, I'm a foodie. So I remember like when I was with the Pirates and we would play here, we would line up reservations like a month ahead. We'd see like, all right, we got a Friday day game at Wrigley. Where are we going to dinner? So I'm fired up for that, honestly.
I'm a big music fan of any kind. It doesn't matter what it is. So the ability to play a bunch of day games and then go see some cool shows those evenings, I'm excited about that. We're foodies as well. So I echo exactly what Jameson said. I mean, there's unlimited amount of options in this city, so I'm super excited.
Yeah, we did Windy City Smokeout last year, which is like country deal. Awesome. Done Lollapalooza a couple times. A little crazy. Have you guys ever done boat on the water? Ever done river or like Michigan boat?
I have not. I'm a golfer. like you, obviously. Yep. So any off day, really, that we had when I would travel in here, we'd play golf.
Jamo, you ever done a boat?
I haven't. I'm a golfer, too. But I've heard a lot about the boats in the summer in Lake Michigan, and I've heard a lot of people saying I need to do the architectural tour. So I'm, like, creating a list of everything I need to do.
Yeah. We lost so we had Riz and Jehei were both boat guys, and they had boats. But we lost two of our boat guys. Stroh's a boat. Jamo? Maybe
I always heard guy. Like the best boat is your friend's boat.
That's exactly so. Right. Yeah. We got to find a new boat guy. I'll work on that. Jamo, you're a big golfer, huh? You play?
I play. I don't think I'm up. I was talking to Tucker yesterday.
Show me a swing.
It's not bad.
He's going to hustle.
I took a couple years off from golf, just trying to stay healthy and work on myself, but I feel like I'm getting the itch to start playing again.
Yankees are a no golf clubs team, right? They're not into it.
Yeah, it's in the team rules with the Yankees. You can't travel with golf clubs, so.
Ew.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah. Stinks. I'm not into that. Are you a guy that'll play on the road? Like, if, you know, you're a couple days away from a start, you'll play?
That's another, you know, in the past, I've targeted off days, too. You'll say, like, hey, we're in Milwaukee. Let's go play Aaron Hills on the off day, stuff like that. Yeah. I've played a lot of bad golf at nice courses.
Yeah. What's your, like, did you play last year much in Detroit?
We didn't have a lot of golfers. We had a bunch of golfers in Cincinnati. Not a lot of golfers in Detroit. I played when I could, but not a bunch.
Yeah, I was a lot of off days last year. I didn't play at all day games or on game days. It's hard to get in and out of the city here and a lot of day games, but we'll have some good ones. We'll have some good ones in spring. I think we have a decent amount of golfers this year. Last year, not a lot, but I think this year we got some guys.
It's good.
My main goal in life is to get Kyle Hendricks to play golf more regularly, and he said he might have the itch a little bit.
I heard he doesn't play really at all, but when he goes out, he shoots 78.
Well, that's what happened. Yeah, he went out.
And that's like the least surprising thing to me ever.
Oh, yeah. It's so pretty. The move is so pretty. It's just he wipes it perfect. And we played team event like 3-4 years ago. He's just flushing it. I'm like, dude, what's going on? You don't play golf? He's like, I don't have that much fun with it. And so he went out and played. Smiley took him out in Arizona a couple weeks ago. He goes out and plays. I get the report that he shot 78 with a triple.
No way.
Yeah, and he's just, like, he's so pure. I'm like, dude, how
he strikes me as a guy that he might not be the longest guy off the tee, but he's going to hit every fairway, and he's going to hit every green, and he's going to two-putt for par and move on to the next one.
Yeah, he's just boring golf.
Yeah.
He just does it all.
That's probably why he doesn't have any fun, because he doesn't see the golf
course. Yeah, he doesn't see enough of nature. Yeah. All right, you did screen time with us. Did you do screen time with us ever?
Screen time?
Have you ever looked at your phone screen time?
Oh, I don't want to.
But I get updates.
Come on. Just today. It can't be that high of a number.
How do you find it?
You go to settings.
I'm worried about this.
Here, you go to settings.
On Sundays when I see it come up on my screen, I just close my eyes and like shut it off.
Yeah, you go to settings, then you scroll down here under like notification, sound, focus, screen time.
Where's that? I got a lot.
Let me see.
Screen time.
Yeah, the one that says screen time.
Oh man. What's yours?
Okay. Is this for today only, right?
Today only?
Oh. Just look at not your daily average, just give me today.
How do I find today?
Oh, boy. Guy, you ever use a phone? Come here. You ever use a phone before?
Oh, see all activity.
See it.
2 hours and 36 minutes.
Ooh, that's a new high on the day. It's a new high on the day. JMO?
Where do you see for today's? Oh, there it is. Yeah, I got 2 hours and 23 minutes.
Wow, some big times. I'm 113. Jan Gomes had like 25 minutes, so if that makes you feel bad.
I'm a video game nerd, so I woke up and I have the app Twitch, and I watch people play video games. That's where I get a lot of my screen time.
I was combing through DraftKings fantasy football lineups today. That's why I'm
on. I thought you were going to say I was on. I was on watching Jameson Taillon video studying his pitch mix.
Kyle Hendricks today.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We're going to bring on Cody and Gracie to finish it up. Thanks, fellas.
You guys saw Jameson Taillon sporting a little bit of a beard there. If you're watching on YouTube along with us, you know what he needs, guys? The Beard Hedger Pro Kit. Breaking news, Manscaped now sells beard products. Guys, it's the best day of my life. They are once again revolutionizing men's grooming with brand new Beard Hedger Pro Kit. Now you can finally use Manscaped products to make sure your drapes match your carpet by going to Manscaped and using code COMPOUND for 20% off and free shipping. The cordless trimmer has a rotary wheel that gives you 20 haircut lengths, all with one guard, so no more messy draws full of extra add-ons. Plus, it's waterproof. It has a titanium-coated T-blade. Guys, what more do I have to say? There's a beard shampoo and conditioner. There's a beard oil in there. There's beard balm. It comes with those three gifts for free. I'm trying to make your beard look better. Look at mine. It needs some help. We all agree. You can see what Chris Rose has said about mine on Twitter. It's not nice. So, don't look at what Chris Rose said, but you can. Go get 20% off and free shipping with code COMPOUND at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping at Manscaped. Use code COMPOUND, the Manscaped Beard Hedger, one stroke, one guard, 20 length. Just had a couple cool guests on in Tyone and Barnhart. We'll get two All-Stars now. Actually, you know what? Three All-Stars, Ian Happ, Mark Grace, Cody Bellinger. I don't know, guys. That sounds like a good time. Let's go back to Chicago one more time. Ian, take it away.
Did you just see how long it took me to sit down?
Body feeling pretty good?
I just told Cody backstage, I said, I haven't gone 0-for-4 in 20 years. It's great.
I think people don't understand that the most exciting part of the offseason is when you can wake up like 2 days later and you go like, oh, I don't have to take five at bats today.
Yeah.
There's no chance I go 0-for-4 today.
We were at dinner last night and I was like appreciating the spicy margarita I was drinking because I didn't have to play a game the next day and I could truly enjoy this margarita.
Yeah. That's yeah. Really the best part.
Yeah.
Gracie.
I didn't have a problem with that even when I was day game the next day, no problem.
Yeah, you learn to do it. When you play here, you have to learn to do it. You got to post. I want to say congratulations on Cubs Hall of Fame.
Thank you.
It's absolutely awesome.
Thank you.
I think one of the coolest things playing here is the history of the game, the guys that have come before us. And obviously you see the flags flying for those guys. But being able to watch, even at different stadiums, the Hall of Fame inductions for the players that will be a part of that franchise's history forever is super, super special. When I was growing up, I don't know if you remember V. Hightower. When I was growing up, Guy V. Hightower, a switch hitter, played at Vandy. I think he played with you in the minor leagues, and you signed a jersey for him. And it was on the side of the, on the wall above the desk. And it was the indoor hitting facility in Pittsburgh that I hit at, had the Iron Mike machines that threw, you know, the yellow ball, dimple balls. And that was like every day when I would go hit, I would see your jersey, Cub jersey signed. And so like to be here doing this now with you, Cubs Hall of Famer, is really cool.
Thank Very you. Impressive.
Thank you. You know, 13 years here, at 13, you know, a quarter of my life was in that uniform you're wearing. And you'll find out, Code, these people are special. They are special, and you know, and I unfortunately, you know, played for 13 here and didn't get to win a World Series. You guys finally, you know, got your World Series, and it was I was watching back home just bawling my face off, you know, like just, you know, but also jealous that I couldn't, you know, that some of the teams that I was on, because, you know, man. We had some star power, even though we didn't win a World Series and we only went to the playoffs a couple of times. But you're talking about three Hall of Famers in Dawson, Sandberg, Maddox, and then you're also talking about, you know, some guys that could play like myself, Sean Dunston, Brian McCray. Then you go back to Jerome Walton. You know, there was. There were some guys that could play here, Joe Girardi. We didn't get to the pinnacle, but we had a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, and they were great teams. And it's it was so much harder to make the playoffs then, right? Like, you had to win your division.
Yes.
And so there wasn't that ability to get in as a wild card team and go play and have a chance for a great group. Like, you watch Philly do it this year, get in with a wild card, but they have a bunch of really proven, like, big league talent that was able to figure out how to get through the playoffs. Can you talk to Cody and I? I was left-handed hitters, right? Playing at Wrigley Field with the wind as a left-handed hitter, like, what was your experience?
As far as what again? I'm sorry.
As a left-handed hitter, playing at Wrigley with the wind.
Okay. I'm going to sound like a little whiny boy here. But I think Wrigley Field is a better hitter's park for a right-handed hitter.
100%. 100%. Can I tell you something?
Okay. See, I'm not being a whiny boy.
Yeah. And I don't want to scare – I'm not trying to scare you, Belly.
I knew going in.
Yeah. We were talking yesterday, and he goes, I'm going to have to hit the ball oppo a little bit again. Yep, center.
Center.
So here we go. Okay, it's – like I said, my first year here was 88. My last year here was 2000. So it's been 22 years since – but, you know, I know there's climate change and all that crap, but but tell me, as a current player – especially you, Ian, you've been here a little while. It seemed to me like Wrigley Field faces north, and I was just telling Cody backstage, you know, the cold north wind blows straight in. So April and May, good luck. And then once it starts to warm up, a warm summer breeze starts to blow. But it seems like rarely does the wind just blow straight out. Yeah, when it warms up, it seems to me like it goes kind of right field foul pole to left field foul pole. Wouldn't you say?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So if you got some juice to left field, like I know you do, and you know you can turn around and hit the other way, you can hit both ways. But I just think it's a little easier to go to left field than it is to right field in Wrigley Field.
Yeah, balls get killed to right, and that wind does, like that summer wind. Which is, it's kind of a neutral wind. It's the one where you look up at the flags and you go like, okay, I have a chance today.
Yeah.
And it's right to left. But there's a really interesting stat. There's only been one season in Cubs history where a left-handed hitter hit 40 homers. Billy Williams did it one time.
Really?
Sweet Swingin.
I didn't know that.
Sweet Swingin did it once. What's your high homer mark?
47.
Oh, oops.
It took me 4 years to hit that man. Damn.
Billy's the only guy that did it, and he only did it one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nuts, but that's, you know, but Wrigley Field does that to you. And being a left-handed hitter, like, you have to get good at going the other way.
Yep.
You have to get good at hitting it low when the wind's blowing in. And there's always these factors, but I think it's cool that we have the shift going away.
I think that's beautiful.
We were just talking about that backstage.
Yeah, tell me about that. Like, as a left-handed hitter, what does that do for you?
It just opens up a completely different part of the game. You know, we were just talking about it. Your whole life growing up, you hit a line drive. Your pitcher's right there. You hit a line drive back at his face. That's a hit your whole life.
100% of the time.
In these last 5 years, it's an automatic out.
Yeah, yeah. There's a shortstop standing right behind.
Shortstop,
yeah.
Right there, and vice versa. You have a third baseman in right field. And so that ball you've hit in front of right field used to be hit your whole life. And now you got Manny Machado standing right there catching everything.
Yeah, with a couple gold gloves.
What I'm most excited for, I think – And I don't know how exactly it's going to look and how it's going to work, but I think it's going to bring a lot of athleticism back into the game.
Yeah, I think so too.
These infielders are going to have to cover a lot of ground and show off, you know, what they can do, as opposed to, you know, standing where the ball's probably going to be hit. And I think for me, as just like a baseball fan, I think that's pretty exciting.
The one thing that I've been talking to people about is, like, as a lefty, when you get up there and you look out, and the shortstop's behind, you know, the shortstop's on the right side of the bag, we'll say, right? Like, he's just to the right of second. The third baseman's playing short. The second baseman's in shallow right. You got the first baseman, and then you have a right fielder. You look over there, and you go, where can I land a baseball?
It's true.
Like, I can fillet it this way, and I can just bleed something over there. I have to hit a laser in the left center gap, a laser in the right center gap, or a homer. What? You don't have a lot of options.
Let me ask you two this. You guys are current players. What does your coaches or your front office tell you? Guys are big, strong guys that can hit the ball a long ways. Do they ever tell you, like, say you're leading off an inning, it's a close game. Man, go ahead and just slap one the other way and get on base. Or do they want, no, you guys are big, strong guys, hit that damn thing on Waveland Avenue.
I'll say how it was here, and then you could talk about L.A. maybe a little bit. But, it was never, like, go hit a homer on the Waveland. But it's always, like, if you do that, you know, if you do, like, punch something over there, it's awesome. Like, everybody gets super fired up. But, you know, like, you're facing these guys. Cutter in on the hands, or like you don't get the option to, like, this guy's throwing 95 mile an hour, cutter on my hands, like, all right, let me just
it's true.
It's, you know, it's so tough. So it's kind of more of hit the ball hard, you know, hit the ball hard wherever it is, and you know, if it ends up being into the shift, if it just pat you on the butt and say, hey man, yeah, keep going. But you can talk about LA, like what your strategy was or approach.
Yeah, I think for me personally, my first years in the big leagues, I was a first baseman, and so I was able to
first baseman is always the best athlete on the field, folks.
that's right. I was able to sneak my athleticism a little bit, so my first few years I was bunting all the time, and it took him a few years to catch on. It's like, oh, this guy, you know, it's kind of fast. So that's my thing. But to go to your point, you want to stay within your approach. There's certain times when you want to get out of your comfort zone and change and, like, try to beat the baseball the other way. But then you're changing what you're good at. You're changing your strengths, and you're letting the opposing guy
dictate
you already. You know, realistically, you stick with your strengths, you stick with your approach, you get the pitch you hit, and you hit that ball. Like, that's the approach that you want to go up every single at bat. And, you know, the statistics have where you hit the ball and everything, but staying within yourself every single at bat is the main goal.
And one of the things that I've struggled with when I try to go the other way, and it happens to me righty too, I'm probably more righty than lefty, is when I'm trying to go the other way, and like I would get shifted righty, so it would be second baseman up the middle or on the other side, shortstop third. So I would try to shoot the four hole. And when I would try to shoot the four hole, I would be so late. The guy's throwing 95 to 100, like, I'm trying to just, like, hit it. I'm just going to hit a ground ball. And then it's like you're fouling stuff off in the dugout, and you're late. And before you know it, you're two strikes. This guy's got a wipeout slider. It's going to hit you in the ankle, and you're going to swing. And, right, like, that's the tough part of it, is, like, you want to hit the ball hard in play, and that gives you a better chance than, like, trying to manufacture something. Once you get to two strikes in this league, the numbers are so, so bad. But I just think from a hitting, especially a left-handed hitter perspective, when you look out there and you see the holes, you see the four hole, you see that hole next to the second baseman, between second base and the second baseman, you now have options where you go, all right, I can hit a line drive to right, I can top spin it, I can hit a hard ground ball in that hole, hard ground ball there, I can still hit it to the other way, I can hook something down the line. Now I have the confidence and the freedom to go up there and just let it eat and let my swing play. And I think that there's a number of guys in this league that they might not be getting more hits because of the shift. They will get some, but there's going to be a lot more solid contact because you're not trying to do to manufacture something. You're just letting your swing play.
Right.
Let me ask you this, Ian. Like I said, it's been two decades since I played at Wrigley Field. When in my era, they grew the grass, infield
grass,
to knee high.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Because they had Say and Bo on the left side of the infield with no range, so they just grew that. I mean, is it still considered long infield grass, or have they cut it down?
It's pretty interesting. So when I came up in 17, so Johnny Lester really liked it wet in front of the home plate.
Yeah.
Because he.
Yeah. See, for my era, for my 13 years at Wrigley, because the infield grass was so long, and most of the time the wind blowing in, it forced you to be it made you be a line drive hitter.
Because there was no hits anywhere else, right?
Wrigley Field taught me to be a line drive hitter.
Yeah.
Because if you hit it hard on the ground, it ain't going anywhere. And if you hit it good in the air, especially for at least, you know, 4 months of the season, you know, you better be Barry Bonds or Andre Dawson or something, you know, Sammy.
Yeah.
So that said, you know, I kind of, in a indirect way, thank God for Wrigley Field because it made me the hitter I became.
Yeah. So to answer your first question, when I got called up, it was longer and it was super wet. The whole infield was just soaked. And it was John's fault. It was really John's fault. And I remember getting called into the office doing my exit meeting in like 18. Theo's like, your sprint speeds are down. I'm like, we're running in a mosh pit. You know, it's so wet. I'm running in mud. It's like, so, you know, eventually we got a new groundskeeper in 2020, and Kevin Kiermaier's brother, he's unbelievable. He has made Wrigley Field absolutely incredible. The surface is perfect. It's you never get a bad hop out there. The grass is in great shape, and it's fast now. It's fast, and they keep the outfield fast too. So balls in the gap get to the wall. So it's a lot different. But I think for me, growing up in the big leagues at Wrigley Field, it's made, you know, I was always a guy that kind of used the whole field left-handed. But if I would have played at Yankee Stadium, I would have pulled the ball, and I would have really tried to pull the ball in the air. That's how I would have grown up in the big leagues, right? Because there's left center there is so deep, and there's more outs. At Wrigley, because the homers are the left center, and that's where your power can play as a left-handed hitter, like, that's become my strength. And pulling the ball in the air isn't necessarily, like, what I do well. And so it's definitely shaped my game as well as a left-handed hitter. Also, as a righty, in the air to right is tough. Right. And so, like, Javi is, like, the only guy that I've seen talk about guys that can, like, cut the wind. Like, I saw Javi go back. It's like, whoa, how are you doing that?
That speed.
Yeah, but it's an interesting part of the game. Cody, can you talk about playing center and first? How do you do that?
Yeah, well, so I grew up, I was always this little guy on the field. I really was. And so I played outfield. I played center field. Between my sophomore year and junior year of high school, I grew a tremendous amount of height. I thought I was going to be short my whole life. I ended up growing to be 6'3", and I was running. I describe it. I was running like a newborn giraffe. I was super lanky. I was super, like, I didn't know how to handle my new body. And so in high school, they moved me over to first base. And we were blessed in high school. We had a 6-hour class. So every day it was a class, it was baseball. And so every single day I'm at first base. And that's where I got really good, is because of that class. And I just, you know, I have good hands, but because of the work that we put in high school, I got super, super comfortable over there.
You are a very good defensive first base.
Very good. And a Gold Glove center fielder. Like, that's the crazy, to me, yeah, that's the craziest thing is, like, because when we played each other in AAA, right, when we were both coming up, you were playing first, and you were picking, can't swear on this podcast, you were picking it, and then you would fly down the line, it was like, oh my God, and then you get to the big leagues, and you're playing some outfield and some first and mixing in, and then you go win the Gold Glove in center. It's like, that is a very rare combination, but, like, super impressive for the athleticism. Yeah. I'm very excited to cover some ground in the outfield together.
It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be really fun. Yeah. 2015, my manager put me out in center field for a few games, like 5-6 games, and I was like, can you please put me back at first base? I do not want to be out here. You know, my legs are sore. You know, I'm getting tired. And little did I know, like, 6 years later, I'd be playing center field in the big leagues. You know what I mean? And they always knew that I had it in me, and I did too, because I played growing up. But, yeah, just enjoy the outfield. I enjoy the getting reads off the bat and running balls down, and just getting my footwork down out there is the most important thing for me.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I know we're going to dive into, like, defense positioning and, like, how we play off each other and all that stuff. And it's fun to learn that. You know, Jay Hay and I got to play together for a long time and, like, really have that connection when I was playing center and he was playing right. And then last year when he was playing some center, I was playing left. So, like, I can't wait to dive into that in spring and do all that stuff with
so fun.
Willie Harris, the man, the myth, the legend, Willie Harris.
Absolutely.
Fellas, have you guys ever looked at the screen time on your phone? Gracie. You ever looked at the screen time on your phone?
Screen time?
Hell no.
I
am not tech savvy.
We just had the other guys on looking at screen time. But I appreciate you guys coming on. That was awesome.
Oh, thanks very much. For having us.
Appreciate it, guys.
Round appreciate of applause. You. Yeah.
And good luck to both you guys this year. Good luck to the Cubs. Really appreciate having.
Yeah.
And how much long are you on today?
For
are we
this
your
is
last
it. Yeah, you guys are the last ones. We're wrapping.
We've been at it. So real quick before I go.
Yeah.
Myself, Sean Dunston, and Ryan Sandberg, we were sitting out on the chairs, and everybody's being introduced. And the three of us are looking at you guys, today's players, you guys are so stinking big. I mean, you guys are huge. And Sean said, why do you think that is? And I said, well, back in my day, you guys take such better care of yourselves than we did. Like, you guys have dietitians and, you know, you got, and people actually care about you. And, I said in my day, you could always go in the clubhouse and bum a cigarette or a chew. Today, you guys are bumming carrot sticks and yeah. Kale shakes.
Turmeric shots.
You know, it's like, and that's why you guys are so stinking big and strong, because you guys take such great care of yourselves. Keep doing it and have a great season, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Guys, thank you for being here. When I say parse, you say... Thank you.
And that will do it for episode 142 of the Compound Podcast. Before we go, I have Sloan screen time. Guys, Sloan Valve, what else do we need to say? If you're peeing in something else, you're doing it wrong. Simply put. All right. Zach checking in with a 5 hours and 49 minute screen time for Monday. Dakota, he's got a long message here. He's already making excuses. Seems a little fishy. He's saying it's really 4:58 because that's when we would record. I don't really care what you're saying, Dakota. It's 6:58. His real time was 6:58. He's trying to MacGyver his way out of 6:58. It was 6:58. I had 7 hours, 44 minutes. Unsurprisingly, I lost. When do I ever win? I had that one good week a couple weeks ago where I had like 3 hours and Ian beat me. Ian didn't submit a time. So we're going to say 23 hours, 59 minutes. I think that's what he did yesterday. I have no way of proving that that's wrong. So that's his time. Ian finishes last, and that will do it for this episode of the Compound Podcast. Episode 142, live from CubsCon. Signing off, I'm producer Tom saying thanks so much for tuning in. Next week, we'll have updates on both Zach and Ian's golf tournaments and a whole lot more as we gear up for spring training and then eventually the regular season here on the Compound Podcast. Oh, presented by Parse Rum. When I say Parse, you say rum. Parse. I don't know if you guys said it. Hopefully you said it. Bye.
Ball and Play 2 presented by DraftKings is underway. Head over to our Warehouse Games channel to see all the action from Ball and Play. Get some skin in the game and download the DraftKings app right now. Don't forget to use our promo code Warehouse. That's promo code Warehouse only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The crown is yours.